Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to HJT Design Radio Straight Talk, a show dedicated to exploring all aspects of creating a great dental office, where the only dumb question is the question that's not asked. Here's Jim and Han.
Good evening, Jim Jarvis here, and again, welcome to Straight Talk, episode number 35. And along with myself, we have Han Tran, our co-host. Han, how are you today?
I am marvelous, Jim. Marvelous. Jim, are we on episode 35 or 34?
This should be 35, if I'm not mistaken. Maybe I'm wrong.
They blur
together. There's been so many of them.
I just have fun, okay? It don't matter the number.
Exactly. Right? And if it's wrong, I apologize. We'll readjust it in the schedule. But... Well, again, tonight's episode is about our third part of our three-part series, the general contractor as a delivery method for your construction project. Now, a general contractor, you know, tonight we're going to talk about what you should expect and why you may or may not want one. But the term general contractor is probably the most widely used and unfortunately sometimes widely misused term in the construction trade. So we're going to go over all aspects and discuss all issues of what a general contractor is, what they do, things that you should look for, things that you shouldn't look for. Are they the best option? Are there other options? And just a thorough review of what the possibilities might be in dealing with this particular delivery method. Now, if you remember, the last two episodes, we talked about the design-build process. That was first part. That episode then moved to the next episode, which was the project, construction manager method of delivery. And so now the third being the general contractor. We've used, and probably the general contractor is probably the most known and used method out there. And it's been that way for many, many, many years in the construction business. Not always the right solution, but it because it's so common, it probably ends up being the solution that happens. I mean, Han, we've dealt with general contractors, and there's some great general contractors, and there's some not so great general contractors, haven't we?
Yeah, that's true. And Jim, you know, there isn't a silver bullet in any of the choices, but they are mainly the options to get your project built. And I think the one that you are most comfortable with. Whatever your circumstances is the one that you choose. But doing so, you should research and make sure that you're right, going down the right path, doing the right thing for the right reasons. But yes, GC, general contractor, would be the choice of the day, simply because that's what everybody knows. Jim, is there, because I heard this word, the title builders is thrown out a lot when they refer to getting somebody to build a building. Can you tell the audience in your understanding the difference between a builder and a general contractor in terms of the commercial projects?
Well, that's an interesting question, and it all depends on what the person who's asking about it comes from. But a general contractor, a builder, those are all the same kind of terms for the same kind of person or team member. It's kind of like Kleenex, it becomes a terminology for something we use to blow our nose. It's all known as tissue paper. But Kleenex happens to be the most common name. Well, the same kind of thing has to do with builder versus a general contractor. You know, the real question is, what the heck is a general contractor? So I guess we should start off the discussion with that. A general contractor, or the general contractor process for creating a building, is one where the design is created by folks like myself and Han. You create all your documents, all your drawings. The design is completed to a point of then it's sent out to bid, meaning you've done all that upfront work. And you go back to our last two podcasts and the previous ones before that, and you'll be able to get an understanding of what amount of work we're talking about. That's all done. You know, Han and I are basically working. We create all those documents. Those documents are then sent out to a bid. Now, that's the first time the general contractor is involved in your process. Go back to our team building episode, and we talk about it's always nice to have a construction entity as one of your team members. Well, in the general contractor method, you do not have a contractor as part of your team. They're not on the team early. They're on the team after a large portion of the work, the design work, matter of fact, all the design work is done. So then you send it out to bid, and you send it out to bid to numerous contractors. The general contractors will look at it. They'll take all our drawings, and that's what they talk with their subcontractors. They gather a price based upon the bid documents that we've created. That price then is given to us, and we sit down and review that with you, the owner, at a particular time and place when bids are due. So typically we have those due at a certain time of the day, a certain day of the week, and then it gives us time to evaluate all the bids. So we then look over all the bid forms, all the prices from all the contractors that have decided to provide a bid. Once we've done that, then a selection is made. We'll make a recommendation. You as the owner make a selection. You may want to interview. You might interview one or two of the leading contractors or general contractors that might be pre-selected from that bid process. And then you'll make a selection of that entity. And then they'll take that and then they start the building process, meaning they go get the permit, then they start building using their contractors or their subcontractors after contracts are created and so on. So that's the process in a nutshell, but there's some things wrong with that. What's the biggest one in your mind, Han?
They come to the project with no involvement. Their numbers are usually higher to protect their butt from getting from getting burned.
We call those the unknowns, the unknown fudge numbers.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. The cost is not. Let me see. The cost is a little bit more fluff than what we often like to see. The range, you don't know. I think the besides the cost is that we don't know the real budget compared to the design, or the real number, or the real cost to build the design. So that's usually the moment of truth. Is that if the bid come in, let's say for a project that where you budget for $1.5 million, and the number comes in at 1.8 to 2.2, that's the moment we say I either get more money or I cut out scope of the projects. And I think that's the biggest issue, is that the unknown until the bid come in.
Yeah, we call that the crap moment. It's like, oh crap,
yeah.
You know, we're in a situation. You as the owner have spent all this time and money to create all these documents to be able to go out to a bid process, and the bid process has come back with a number. And it's kind of the hope and pray. You hope and you pray that it's going to be within the budget, but 9 times out of 10, it's not. Because in any building construction environment, costs change so quickly that it's fluid. It's a fluid process, and what cost you something today might cost you 1.5 times tomorrow, just because of whatever. Materials go up, labor becomes scarce, everybody's busy, whatever it is. Now, some people step back and say, well, but the general contractor guarantees you a price. No, they don't. They gave you a bid based upon that set of documents, based upon this understanding, and then that's the basis that everybody starts from. One of the, I guess, the biggest disadvantages, and I don't want to just jump into disadvantages, but one of the big disadvantages that you run into is that there's a learning curve that this builder, this general contractor, has to digest all of the documents, the designs, the drawings, and everything else. He then has to put a price to it, he or she, and then they have to then begin the process of actually building that. So many times we've heard these words, haven't we, Han? That wasn't
all
what
the time.
I understood was in the drawings, and I didn't have money in that for that particular whatever. You hear it over
and over again.
So what's it do? It creates conflict, the potential for
change order.
Yeah,
that nasty word
called change order. And it's not the change order because there's something in the ground that was wrong, or there's something in the ground that nobody knew about, or there was an issue because this material is no longer available and you have to go with this or that. It's not those kind of change orders, which are legitimate change orders. It's a change order because, I didn't have that in my bid. And, you know, you hear it over and over and over again. So it's a big problem. Now, don't get me wrong. There are a lot of advantages to general contractors. First off, there's a lot of them. So you have a large pool of potential builders for your project. And so you can kind of take advantage of that in the sense that you can pick the very, very best. You have a whole lot to pick from, so you can let them be competitive against each other. But at the same time, you have to be forewarned that there are some of these disadvantages. So if you decide to go down this path, you have to be able to understand that you should have some funds, an extra set of funds, an extra contingency set aside to cover those things that might creep up. General contractors, they're used a lot. There's a lot of them. There's a lot of things out there. And for renovations, you know, maybe a general contractor is more of a better scenario than it is for a new build. We can discuss that probably all night long. But, you know, it's out there. And
Jim?
Yeah, go ahead.
Jim, in general, as far as the supply of general contractor for your average construction project, that is true that there's quite a few to pick from. The challenge we have is when you deal with contractors that has a good range or competent in building dentist offices. That's when the number of available contractors to bid the job become a little bit tighter, okay? Because it's a specialty type of construction or type of project. But in general, the general contractor could be found at you know, at various range of size and ability. Jim?
Yeah, exactly. So once you've created, you know, these bid documents and went to all that trouble, and then you come down to the point of now we're ready to get up and we bid it, and now we've got a general contractor, list of potential general contractors, and they bid, you know, that's a, and then actually the selection of the general contractor, that's a simple process. You basically look at the prices, you look at their conditions, which are part of the bid documents, and you look at their references. Once you've made a determination that, yes, everything that we hope for was in their bid, based upon what their answers to the bid documents, and that the prices in the particular budget that you've established, and their references follow through in the sense that you get a good understanding of what they're like to work with, then it's a matter of you make the selection. Now, here's an important aspect of that selection process. Cheapest is always, always not guaranteed the best. What's your thoughts on that, Hon?
yes, that is.
We have
very,
that.
Very
we have
true.
That discussion a lot, don't we?
Always, the biggest challenge for you know, some of the big challenge on our on projects when it comes to what contractor to use and stuff like that is that they always go to the owner. Always has a tendency to go to the lowest guy because they don't want to spend any more money than they have to. But the lowest guy, after the project, after the delay, after the change order and all that stuff, work out to be the high guy. We run into that all the time. So the lowest bidder are often removed from the package because they just normally don't work out. Historically, based on our experiences, they're usually the one that's most difficult to work with. They're usually had, they say, I didn't include that in my bid a lot more than others. And it ended up costing, you know, the project more than what they had have contracted to deliver for.
Well, more yep. in a couple ways, more in the case of dollars, but also more in the time delay, and then more in the stomach acid. The whole aspect of conflict and resolution and dealing with the issues, which all take time away from what you're trying to accomplish, which of course is run a dental practice. Here's a scenario, and we see it a lot. The bids go out, they come in. One bid's $440,000. The next bid is $600,000, and you get $650,000, you get a $550,000, and you get an $800,000+. Well, in initial, Han and I will look at that, and we can tell you one thing: low bid, more than likely, is the most inexperienced of the group and potentially the hungriest, and that's on the good side, may have missed too many things in their bid process, so we're very leery of that low bid, especially when it's so much lower than the rest of the group or the average. The high bid, the $800,000 bid, he's busy. He's way busy. He doesn't really even want this project, but he threw out a big number because if we're stupid enough to say recommend to use them, well, then, you know, he's going to make money hands over fist, and he'll let the other projects maybe that he's working on slide while he fits yours in. So the group that's in the middle, that's in the $400,000 to $550,000, somewhere in there in the middle of that number might be the real number of what this project is going to cost. And that's the evaluation process that is actually a rather extensive kind of thing that you really need help on. You're going to need help from a professional like ourselves who understands all that, can help you evaluate, because again, though just going with the low bidder is not always the wisest. It's not a government project. So you can pick anyone you want. You don't have to pick the low bidder. And I guess so, we can't stress that anymore, can we, Han?
No. Okay, Jim, so to ensure that you have a fair and accurate bid, would you recommend that the owner have a complete detail set of drawing and not use what we would call, usually typically call a builder set?
Absolutely.
And why would you do so?
The more detailed the drawings are, the more thorough, the more accurate, you do one thing, and that's eliminate questions. And if you eliminate questions in the bid process, what you end up doing is you reduce their fudge factor that they have to put in there to cover their butt. So if they know every aspect of the project based upon the drawings, then they're going to be more comfortable making their bid as tight as possible, so it's as low as possible. So it's kind of a dance that is required to have a very thorough, very, very thorough set of drawings. But at the same time, Han and I, we can't tell the general contractor what he doesn't read. So he has to be able to read these documents, go through them, have his subcontractors read them and go through them and thoroughly understand every aspect of it. And that's the biggest disadvantage of the general contractor process delivery method versus, for example, a construction manager, where we talked about it before. Yeah. Go back and listen to the episodes, the podcast, the construction manager, he's there on day one making comments and recommendations on the decision. So he's already learned. He knows how this building's put together. He knows what's going on. He knows why we made those decisions. And he's not trying to second guess those decisions at the bidding process. There's another whole aspect that we open ourselves up is to substitutions. Now, substitutions is a terminology that happens during the bid process, where the contractor's going to say, you know, I can maybe save you some money by putting these kind of doors in versus the doors that you specify. Might be a good solution, might not be a good solution. But all of that has to be evaluated when you're making your selection. And so we have to evaluate, you know, is that potential substitution a valid one? And is that cost an equal apples to apples comparison to everyone else? Because if one bidder says I'll substitute this and another bidder says I'll substitute that, but if they're not equal to each other, then it doesn't become an apples to apples comparison. You're going to say, Han?
Well, yeah, the substitution, let's say if you specify a particular product, that substitution should be of the same quality without added cost. Jim, you brought out a really, really good point in terms of dealing with, I mean, just human factor of what they do or don't do during the bidding process. We've seen it from, you know, we've seen it at all level of documentation from barely above the napkin sketches to a very, very complete set of drawing. We get a lot of comments that our drawing is too detailed, and sometimes that worked against the bidding process because when the drawing is really detailed, even though a good contractor appreciated and know exactly what it is that you're looking for, those that don't have the experience are often intimidated by it because they're afraid that you'll hold their feet to the fire to provide what they bid on. So some of the challenges that we often run into result in a contractor say, I didn't include that in my bid, is that they don't take the time to familiarize themselves with the project and they don't read the drawings. I mean, it's our drawings are usually about 20 to 30 sheets of drawings, and they're large drawings, and it's filled with ink. A lot of times they just look and say, it's a wall, which can do that. It's a roof, we can do that, but they don't go through and read the detail, the notation, so that they realize that the drywall on the wall that we specify, we design, are your abuse resistant type of drywall. Therefore, it costs more than your standard, big box drywall that they can buy. So if they don't read it, they will try to kind of wiggle their way out of it during the construction. Instead of buying and doing the right things or the things that they have contractually obligated themselves to, they will try to substitute that. And that is due to the fact that they did not read drawings. So that is a big problem. We see that on practically every project where they say we didn't include that, or we didn't anticipate that. So in the bidding process, as we review the drawings, we don't just look at the numbers. We look at the exclusion, the substitution, everything that the contractor wants to do to include as part of that bid should be spelled out. Otherwise, the rude surprises can be ours to figure out. Jump.
Right. And in that particular process, you may say, well, wait a minute. The contractor said they were going to build this for $1.5 million. They gave us an official bid. Isn't that an enforceable contract? Darn right it is. The problem is enforceable contract means one thing. It means you got to go to court. You got to go through the legal system to enforce it, which all takes time. No one wants to stop their project or slow their project down to enforce or to resolve the conflicts that potentially occur utilizing a general contractor. So you have to negotiate. You deal with them. You work through them. And the bottom line is you give some, they take some, they take some. It's basically a give and take. You never walk away with not paying something, huh?
Yeah, Jim, I think they're being too polite in using the term conflict. For me, it's a borderline extortion. You got a project that has a deadline. You may have to be out of your lease space, in 3 or 4 months, and the project drag on and so on. It's going to hurt you in so many ways if you don't give in and give more than take. So, yeah, conflict is a polite way of saying it. But the only way that I think, or some of the way to protect yourself, is have everything spelled out, everything on the drawing, tell them what it is that they bid for, to do, and then hold them to it. And that is that, otherwise, the more wiggle room you provide to the contractor, that's not spelled out in the bid. It just means more trouble for you, more headache. Jim?
Right. And so it becomes a continual series of negotiations as things come up, issues arise, pieces and parts. And this could be simple stuff like, okay, the brick that we selected, that the one you fell in love with got discontinued and is no longer available. Well, that's a normal thing. That can happen. And, you fell in love with it. That's the brick that you want to put on your project, but it's not available. Or it's a special order, and he didn't have it in his bid as a special order. And so that means that they have to pay a premium for it to be produced and made and get it on the job in time for you to move it forward. Now, is the contractor going to eat that cost, or are they going to come back and say, I want extra money to be able to do that? Yeah, well, depends. Some might, others won't. But again, you have that, I want to call it the potential for owner-contractor conflicts. And it happens way too much, and that's one of the big disadvantages. It's there, and it's, you have to deal with it, and over and over and over again. What do we hear from those clients of ours? They call it, I'm being nickel and dimed, but it's not nickels and dimes. It's dollar. It's dollars and bigger dollars, and that happens.
Yeah, more like thousands, right?
Yeah, and it could be quickly thousands of dollars, or they end up with being, you know, getting less of a quality product or less of a particular material, or substituting a cheaper material just to get the dang thing done, so they can, you know, you can move into the project and start doing dentistry and quit wasting all the time arguing back and forth. So, you know, again, lowest price is not always the best price. You've got the potential for increased change orders. You've got the potential for owner contractor conflicts. But one of the biggest things, and we haven't really touched too much on that, is that you don't know what your project's going to cost until the day that it's bid. And even then, you don't know what it's going to cost until the day you're done. And you actually move in for what your total cost is going to be. So, I don't know about you, and Han, I know you and I both feel the same way. That's a difficult way to kind of do things. You know, we go out and want to buy something. You go out and want to build something. Or you go, you know, you want to say, okay, my next purchase is going to be this vehicle. Would you go buy that vehicle based upon, I don't know what it's going to cost me today, and then I don't know what it's going to cost me a month from now, and I don't know what it's going to cost me when I eventually take the car or the vehicle. But it's what I want. Well, that's all fine and good if you have an unlimited amount of money, but not something that we'd want to recommend, would we?
No, here's a couple of things that I think that, the design, bid and build, that is the you know, that is the scenario involved in a general contractor. There is ways, or there are steps that we have implemented in our process to help at least minimize some of those surprises, so that we, you know, so that we have a good and comfort zone to work with before it actually go out to bid. In project, there is a service, and it's often used in large projects. And in a recent project that we were involved in as a consultant, it was a $4.5+ million dental office, 10,000 square feet. During the design process, an estimator service was used. So it was not a construction management type of delivery method, but it was a design, bid, and build process like what we're talking about. But they used, the client agreed to using a third-party estimating services that allowed the team to see dollar, cost to date as the project, progresses. That service was set, the money that set aside for that service was $25,000. Most dentists building a 3,000-5,000 square foot office, spending $1.5+ million, usually balk at that extra value added service. Okay, there's options to allow you to know at least to date where the project is in this design phase and what the potential cost is. So that there is way, but it's typically because the client often look at that as an expense, an added expense. They rather wait until after go out for bid. You know, maybe some of us like to roll the dice and see what it come out, and then we can go from there. But it's, you know, it's a big gamble, Jim.
Right, it is, and it's kind of like insurance. You know, we all buy insurance. You buy insurance for those issues that you can't really control, and that's why it's out there. But it's, you know, it's expense. So the other system that we have in place is obviously we look at, you know, we can either integrate or hire or coerce a builder friend who has a relationship with us to help give us estimates as we go through the design process. So, you know, during the initial design, typically there's an estimate of what the cost is going to be. And what we like to do is say, all right, here's what the cost might be. And then we put 25% contingency on top of it because there's too many unknowns. So there's a 25% contingency. Then after the design development work is done, there's a cost estimate that's created. And so more knowledge is known, more detail is created. You know, then we'll put a 15% contingency on that so we can narrow down the contingency a little bit. Then you get done with working drawings, then you should have a 10% contingency on that number. So for the unknowns that might be out there. So there is a contingency method, but what that does is it kind of holds back on your ability to really know or to maximize what you're going to get for your dollars. And that is a disadvantage. Whereas if you have that input from a construction entity like a construction manager from day one while it's all being designed, you don't have to have those high contingencies. You have a much lower contingency in there and both basically go with like a normal 10% all the way across the board. So, you know, the contractor, the GC, the general contractor, not having pre-construction input is crucial. And that's the example of why it is crucial. Their knowledge, their input is critical to the design process. And you don't have that in a GC method. In a general contractor method, it does not exist. Hon?
That is true. Mainly because usually they're not invited to the table. Their time will be, you know, is money. If they feel that they going to have to bid others at the end of the game to get the project, they may give you the time of the day to give you numbers and stuff like that. But you know, the incentive for them is low in this process. Okay, so it's if they know they're going to be involved in the project from the get-go, then they would be involved at a different level. They're more committed to the process. Jim?
Yeah, exactly. So what happens is you basically extend your design process, because here's a scenario that happens so many times. We design the project. The project goes out to bid. The project comes in overbid, not because anything we did or didn't do, or is because whatever the reasons are that the project was just at that particular day and moment in time for somebody to build it is more than what you were hoping for. So then we go back and have to adjust the design. That takes time. Then that has to go back out to bid, which takes time. I mean, bidding at a minimum is a 2 to 3 week, more than likely a 4 week process. So you're losing a month just to get the price. So you've already done it once and you go back out to bid. All right. We take some time to make some adjustments, whatever those adjustments might be, based upon the input that we got during the bidding process. And then we go back out to bid and we give them another couple weeks to look at it. Maybe we'll have the three selected contractors that seem to be the most knowledgeable and in the right price point. We'll have them rebid it. And so, you know, you're not going to rebid it to all, you know, five or six or seven contractors, because it really doesn't make any sense for the guy who wanted to do $800,000 on your project to rebid a project that should be more in the $500,000 range. And then, so that takes a couple more weeks. And then a couple, you know, you have the time we and energy that we have to spend to do the redesign work. And then you get your new price. And let's say your new price is there, but it's not just there. We're a little bit off. Well, then you got to go back and talk with the best contractor that we've evaluated, you know, might not be the lowest one, and you get some more input from them. And then you finalize yourself a negotiated final price based upon a negotiated final design. You've lost how many weeks? It could be a couple months. And so it really does extend the process, and it extends it to the point of, what do we said before, Han? $25,000 to $30,000 a month per operatory? You've got,
yep,
10, you've got 10 operatories. That's $250,000 to $300,000 you've lost. Minimum. Maybe more. If it's a month and a half or 2 months, you've lost all that income just to be able to have a general contractor on the project. So it, a lot of times, doesn't make good business sense. It really just doesn't make good business sense. Now,
there is one, Jim, there's one thing that I'd like to share that I thought could sabotage this whole process too. Okay, and it's financing. We have encountered a couple of times where the client have not gotten their financing in place. And they, you know, because we always encourage, you know, whatever the budget is, have a contingency of minimum 10 to 20% so that you have the resource to work with when things, you know, unforeseen thing pops up. But we have encountered a few occasions where the client just have not gotten their financing in place when they proceed with the project. And that will take the wind out of your sail, whether you get the number that is high or low, when your financing is not where it need to be realistically, and that's a killer. So I just thought I'd share that. Get it in place. Now talk to the banker, you know, talk to the lender, make sure you got your numbers and all that, and work from a realistic budget. Jim?
Yeah, that makes quite a lot of sense, because, you know, you may say in your mind that, well, I can afford a $1.5 million project, but the bank's going to come back and say, maybe you can really only afford $1 million. And so do you want to write a check for $500,000 out of your bank account, if it's there, to be able to move forward with this project? You know, you should know that stuff way ahead of time before you get to the point of saying, okay, I'm going to hire Jim and Han to do all this work, and I'm going to bid this thing, and I'm going to get out to a general contractor, and the contractor's going to give me a price. And then I want to move forward because, yeah, I bought that piece of property and I'm ready to go. Yeah. So, yeah, it's a interesting thing. Well, the other thing that is we think is very important in the process is, in a general contractor delivery method, you really have no opportunity to pre-select or utilize subcontractors that you want to have on the job. The subcontractors that are on the project are unknown to you. You do not have the right or the ability to select any of them. you don't have the right or the ability to pre-select anyone. Let's say you have a client that's a drywall company and you want to use them in your project. You don't get to say who gets used in the project on a general contractor method. Now, the general contractor may say, yeah, I'll look at their price, but you know what's going to happen. He's going to go with his normal low bid general or subcontractor on the drywall. He's not going to use your buddy. And if your client or your patient gives you a cut rate price, let's say your patient just really wants to do this project, wants to be involved and says, I'm going to give you a 20% discount. Oh, he'll turn his bid in and it'll be a 20% discount. But what will happen is the general contractor will go to his favorite bidder, his favorite drywall guy, and say, I've got a price that's 20% less. You want to match it and do the work, or do you want to let this other company do it? You know what happens? They match it and do the work, and your buddy or your client is not on the project. That kind of backroom, behind closed door dealings happen all the time, and no one knows about it. It's that, what do we call that? The dirty little secret of construction. Those kind of things happen.
Yeah, but
and you don't get involved. Yeah, all the time. You don't get involved in that. And that's one of the many ways that a general contractor will be able to manipulate and or massage. I use that word loosely. Massage the pricing to be able to get the most out of the project and still win the project. So you don't get to select that general that subcontractor, and you have no idea who's on the job. It could be it could be anyone. It could be people that are not local. It could be people from the next town over. It could be people from the next state over that travel around the country that have a relationship with this particular contractor, and he likes to use them because they're cheap and dirty and fast. And they, you know, they listen to him and they get it done. Well, you know, cheap and dirty and fast might be a good thing, but maybe it's not. So it's something to consider.
Let me throw a curveball in there, Jim. Let's say the client, the owner, say, but I want to use Bob the drywaller on my project. Take it out of the general contractor's bid, and I want to use my buddy Bob. What would be the pros and cons in that? I know what I had to share. Okay. Well, what would you say if that scenario? Because it does come up often.
Yeah, it does. And that leads into my next thought, which I'll answer at the same time, is you don't know what things cost. In the general construction delivery method, you have no idea what line items cost. All you know is the total cost. And even if you were to try to get line item costs, those line item costs are so, I don't want to call the word diluted, but they're so manipulated that you really still don't know what items cost. How much is the drywall bid for? The general contractor is not going to give you that bid amount. He's not going to show you the bids, the multiple bids that he's gotten. So if you decide to say, I want to have Bob, my friend, or my client, the drywall company, do the drywall bid, and the general contractor is going to say, okay, I'll let you. You can do that, and I'll give you a $10,000 credit. Do you know that is Bob's work worth $10,000, or was the bid amount that was in the contractor's estimate for much larger than that? So he or she pockets some of it, and then only gives you a $10,000 credit. That's one of the issues that you run into more so in the substitution or change order process in a general contractor, because you have no idea what the costs are. You never get a dollar out for a dollar in. So we've got we've had projects where the client has said, I'm going to build the wall out of this and I'm covering it with this material, and then changes their mind through the process and says, nope, I want to use brick. I want to use full face brick on this thing. Well, the contractor says, well, brick's going to cost you, well, this is a number. It's going to cost you $100,000 to add brick to this project. Yeah, but don't I get some credit for the material that was on there originally in the bid? Oh, yeah, you got the credit for it, and I reduced that $100,000 by that credit. So it was $100,000+, and now it's $100,000. All you got to go by is you got to trust that he's not, you know, telling you a story. Hon, you were laughing. I know you have something to say.
Yes, right. You just invited the fox into the hen house. That basically that. You will never know. In the construction field, they use a lot of funny math, okay? And I'm being nice. Is that if you put in, if there's a door that you have and you decide, I don't need that, I don't want that, take that out. You get maybe $150 back for it. But tomorrow, if you change your mind, you want to put that door back, it might cost you $300. Okay? I've never heard of a explanation of why it cost me $300 to put the same door back in, and I only get $150 off when I want to take it out. I think that's where Common Core came from. Okay? But it's a different kind of math.
It's a different kind of math. And construction is a nasty, dirty business at times, and can be. And I know Han and I, we were throwing out this all negative and no positive kind of thing. Yeah, there are great general contractors out there. Don't get us wrong, but they're far and few between. There are good ones out there, and they're usually really, really, really busy. And so the odds are that they're working on much bigger projects than your project. You know, you may say, well, crap, $1.5 million or $2 million project is a big project. Yeah, it is a big project. But a $40 million school is a lot bigger. And, you know, you get a lot of those being built in a particular area. They're going to suck up the great general contractors, because those have to be done in a general contractor method. Just until recently, that was just law. They couldn't even use the construction manager process. It had to all be done by GC and low bid. So they suck up all the really, really good general contractors, and you're left with the others to pick from. So
and they suck up the biggest pool of talent in the area to work on those high price projects, and you end up with people that own a pickup truck, a hammer, and call themselves finished carpenters. Right?
And
so
anybody can be a general contractor. All you got to do is go take a test. Now, you won't have a whole lot of references to follow behind you, and you won't have a whole lot of this and a whole lot of that, but anybody can be a general contractor. And so that's why it's very crucial that you have a very stringent selection process if you decide that I got to do this with a general contractor method. Just, you know, be forewarned and be very careful. So,
now, Jim, we have projects that, you know, like you say, there are good general contractor out there, and we had encounter a few that they don't nickel and dime, you know, the client. They do what they promise. Easy to work with, and a pleasure to work with, and we would highly recommend them. But like Jim said, that because they do such good work, and they're in high demand, they can pick and choose the clients they want to work with, okay? So it leaves you with people, you know, with a contractor that in the lower tier. It just as long as you have good documentation, good contract set up, and know, and hold them to it. You may come out at the end of the project winning more than losing.
Right. Yeah. I guess our recommendation would be is if you decide you want to do it via general contractor, at least go about or think about the idea of seeing about what you can get some estimates during the design process to keep you on track. You definitely keep a contingency, a large contingency at first and a scaling down contingency as we go through the design process. Have an impeccable, thorough set of documents, as thorough as you possibly can have to be able to bid from, and have an impeccable bid form and documents, and try to get all the information possible out there. So what that all means is you have to have someone who really knows this stuff and really knows dentistry and the dental design process to be able to create these kind of things, so that all those questions, the right questions, are asked as part of the bid documents, and then really have a thorough review of those bids. Don't pick the cheapest one just because they're the cheap, so that you can set yourself up to at least have the most possible, the best possible chance of coming out of this thing ahead, or at least, you know, in a pretty good shape. And check references.
I got a question too.
Check references beyond check references. Okay, your question on.
My question, because this often also come up in discussion. So you bid the project and you award the contract. What happened to the architect? Do you want to keep him on, or you want to boot him out? I would recommend keep your architect. Okay?
Who's going to help you with all those conflicts?
Well,
do you want to fight that battle alone? You know, when the contractor says, I didn't have that on my bid. Oh, that wasn't what I looked. That's not what I saw on the drawings. Well, why not? It's on page 10, 15, 20 in the specs. Why didn't you see it on the drawings?
Yep.
You know, so in all of that, those conflict resolution / negotiations, in all of those questions in the field, do you want to take that on as the owner and try to resolve that with your contractor? Or do you want a professional like us there on your side, standing up for you and saying, no, Mr. or Mrs. Contractor, yeah, it's on here on these documents. You need to do it. And here's the reason why.
You know, Jim, it doesn't even have to be conflicts. I mean,
no, but it is. That's just one important reason. Of course, there's a ton of other reasons that you want to keep us on board, because we're there to be your eyes and ears. We've talked about it in previous podcasts. Go back and listen to them. But you know, we're there to be your eyes and ears and be able to observe to make sure that the design intent that was created in the beginning is actually what's built. And there's quite a lot of areas where having the architect on board through construction will actually save you money and reduce change orders and reduce conflicts and reduce issues that might slow your project down. So, yeah, that is an important aspect on.
Yeah. I'm going to offer a pretty cavalier statement. The only person on your project that are intimately familiar with the project is the architect, period. Okay? Everybody else is on that project, whether you're consultant engineers and so on, they are a vital member of the team. But they are specialized in their little pieces, but the architect is the one responsible for the entire project. So if there's technical issue that deal with building system, components, code, what and how you use it and all that stuff, it goes through the hand, the eyes, and the ears of your architect. When you cut out your quarterback,
how do you win the game? Okay.
It's hard.
It's very hard. And that proverbial statement that, the fox in the hen house on the project, regardless how good the general contractor is on the project, he or she had one purpose, is to build that project for as little money as possible for the highest profit margin as possible. That is their obligations. They give you what you're looking for and what they have obligated themselves for. The quality and the technical, the quality and the correctness of the design and of everything that's involved in that project, somebody's got to watch after it. If you are the client whose specialty is in dentistry, you may not be the one that tells them what species of wood to use, whether the laminate is good enough, or you should use chemically resistant laminates and on. Every hours of your production time, my understanding, it could be anywhere between $1,000 to $1,500. Do you really want to waste that in answering which hammer, what size and what weight of hammer the contractor should use? I figure not. But the architect should always be involved in the project throughout the entire process.
Definitely.
I guess
the big recommendation would be really think twice about using a general contractor. If you can get a construction manager, I'm doing a scenario or synopsis of the last three episodes. If you can get a construction manager on your team, that has the best potential of giving you the very best project for the very least amount of money and the least amount of headaches. Go back and listen to the three podcasts and see what you think. But our recommendation is a construction manager is always the better way to go if you can get a good one, as opposed to any of the other two options, a design build and or a general contractor. With that, Han, I did have an email that came in, and it actually kind of talks a little bit about this. A doctor sent an email and says, how do I get a construction manager on my team? Well, we talked a little bit about that, but what you would create is based around a request for proposal that we would typically help you create. We create that request for proposal that helps the construction manager understand what you're looking for. It'll be the potential size of the project, the amount of operatories, the criteria of what you're looking for, whether, we're going to ask for things like, what's your experience in doing dental projects? We're going to ask for references. We're going to ask for their fee schedule based upon an anticipated construction time. So there's a whole list of things that we put together in our request for a proposal. And then you send that out to a selected group of construction managers for them to come back with their fee to do that. Once you've interviewed and determined that the person is what you want to do, then you'll sign a contract with that construction manager and then are part of your team. So it's a very similar process to picking a architect and designer, just like you would pick a construction manager, just different criteria.
Very good.
Yeah. Han, what, if anything, have we had any hot things from Dental Town, the forum?
Yeah, it's I've seen in the recent week there's several discussion for new build projects, and it's relating to site, placement of building and how it's used and why it's used and things like that. And Jim, we often, in our project process, when a client start out with just a raw piece of land, he's going to build his project. I myself typically look at access to the site. You know, this is on a preliminary basis. You know, what would be, is it sitting on a Department of Highway property or, you know, access where they're going to have to be involved, you know, to get a, you know, a curb cut or access onto the site off of their road, or is it in the city environment and so on. So access to the site is important. What I've been looking at or seeing is that buildings are designed, or should I say, at least on a preliminary basis, access, parking, orientation, and all that are totally, absolutely ignored. It's one of those things where don't try this at home, leave it for professionals, comes to mind, okay, and it's being nice. Those out there that are listening and tuning in, if you are embarking on a project that involves a new site for a new build, the site itself is an integral part of the design. Your building should be designed around how the site's going to be used. You don't design, we try not to design from the inside out. And then, you know, or worse yet, you don't design a building and then find a site to try to fit it on. It just wouldn't be right. You know, it's like going to a tailor trying to get a suit measure and use somebody else's body. It just doesn't work well. So a site plan, even on a preliminary basis to see how things can fit, would be ideal. It should be part of the design process. And not after. That's it. That's basically what I've seen in the last few weeks. I thought, gosh, it's an area that the owner who's embarking on a project don't know and don't have. You know, it's a you don't know what you don't know type of scenario. So they try to fit a building onto a site and not knowing how it's going to work. That's what I've been seeing, and I encourage them to engage in a conversation with whether it's a civil engineer or an architect, but on a preliminary basis before the civil engineer get involved, the architect probably be the more suited one to, you know, to work out those preliminary detail and design for you, because they have to design the building on that site first.
Right. So the moral of that story is it's never too early to involve us. It really is never too early. Before you've bought property is not too early. Just for that
you
reason.
You know that thing that before you dig, call Miss Dig? You know that I'm talking about?
Yeah.
All right. Well, before you buy, call us. Okay.
I like your commercial.
I want to use that slogan.
Yeah, okay. I think you're right. That'd be good. Maybe we'll do that in the next marketing thing. We're a little bit over time, and obviously there's a lot to talk about in this, and we're thankful that you spent the time with us this evening. Hopefully it's been educational. If you have any questions at all at any time, feel free to get a hold of us. You can get us through our website or through our 800 number. We look forward to spending some time with you next week on another exciting topic that we're going to come up with, everything that has to do with dentistry. On?
Yes, right. Well, I appreciate you spending the time this evening with us. Until next time, have a good evening.
You've been listening to HJT Design Radio Straight Talk with Jim and Han. Contact us and find out more info about upcoming shows, please log on to our website at www.hjtdesign.com. Until next time.